Well, everybody, great to be with you again. My name is Michael Millerman, and today we're going to go over this article called Why AI Will Save the World. Reading it together with you for the first time, although the author here was on the Lex Fridman show recently, and it was a clip from their interview I saw that referred to this article and intrigued me enough to want to read it together with you. So in just a minute, we'll do that. Like, share, subscribe, visit millermanschool.com for courses on philosophy and politics. More and more of my students are talking to me these days about the implications of artificial intelligence for sovereignty and for the common good, for our basic ideas of political order. And therefore, it's a good idea for us to get more into the details of how some people are speculating about the political and human significance of these new systems. Okay, so let's begin. The era of artificial intelligence is here, and boy, are people freaking out. Fortunately, I'm here to bring the good news. AI will not destroy the world, and in fact, may save it. First, a short description of what AI is. The application of mathematics and software code to teach computers how to understand, synthesize, and generate knowledge in ways similar to how people do it. AI is a computer program like any other. It runs, takes input, processes, and generates output. AI's output is useful across a wide range of fields, ranging from coding to medicine to law to the creative arts. It is owned by people and controlled by people like any other technology. So you see very quickly and early on here, guarding against the idea that there's something autonomous or sovereign or tyrannical about AI. It's a tool, and like any other tool, it works in the hands of people, he says. Let's see, a shorter description of what AI isn't. Killer software and robots that will spring to life and decide to murder the human race or otherwise ruin everything, like you see in the movies. An even shorter description of what AI could be, a way to make everything we care about better. Okay, so it's not going to be runaway killer technology, but it might be something that we use to make the world a better place. Why AI can make everything we care about better. The most validated core conclusion of social science across many decades and thousands of studies is that human intelligence makes a very broad range of life outcomes better. Smarter people have better outcomes in almost every domain of activity. Academic achievement, job performance, occupational status, income, creativity, physical health, longevity, learning new skills, managing complex tasks, leadership, entrepreneurial success, conflict resolution, reading comprehension, financial decision-making, understanding others' perspectives, creative arts, parenting outcomes, and life satisfaction. Further, human intelligence is the lever that we have used for millennia to create the world we live in today. Science, technology, math, physics, chemistry, medicine, energy, construction, transportation, communication, art, music, culture, philosophy, ethics, morality. Without the application of intelligence on all these domains, we would all still be living in mud huts, scratching out a meager existence of subsistence farming. Instead, we have used our intelligence to raise our standard of living on the order of 10,000 times over the last 4,000 years. What AI offers us is the opportunity to profoundly augment human intelligence, to make all of these outcomes of intelligence and many others, from the creation of new medicines to ways to solve climate change, to technologies to reach the stars, much, much better from here. AI augmentation of human intelligence has already started. AI is already around us in the form of computer control systems of many kinds and is now rapidly escalating with AI large language models like ChatGPT and will accelerate very quickly from here if we let it. In our new era of AI, and here's, I guess, the vision of what it could be if it is developed to be helpful to humanity as a tool that augments our intelligence and improves our quality of life. In our new era of AI, every child will have an AI tutor that is infinitely patient, infinitely compassionate, infinitely knowledgeable, infinitely helpful. I should add, though, not if it's been trained on human experience. In that case, I think it will get won't have these characteristics. It certainly won't have any basis on which to model them. Okay, infinitely patient, infinitely compassionate, infinitely knowledgeable, infinitely helpful. The AI tutor will be by each child's side, every step of their development, helping them maximize their potential with the machine version of infinite love. I have to think about that because I have some kids of my own. And one of them right now is with his grandma. And they're doing complicated math, you know, Russian, Soviet, Jewish grandma type. So, of course, the child is doing math well beyond his years. And I wonder, you know, it's under the pressure somehow, well, when he doesn't crack, under the pressure of something other than infinitely compassionate, infinitely patient, infinitely helpful, infinite love, he develops his mathematical skills. And I've seen kids before in swim school, and they train with a teacher who's not infinitely patient and all of that, but rather whose strictness somehow is correlated with their development. So I just wonder, you know, I have some experience of human tutors and human teachers producing excellent results in their students. And you just wonder, will infinite love and infinite compassion really produce the best outcomes? Can't, doesn't go without saying, but it does sound good. Okay, next. Every person will have an AI assistant, coach, mentor, trainer, advisor, therapist that is infinitely patient, infinitely compassionate, infinitely knowledgeable, and infinitely helpful. The AI assistant will be present through all of life's opportunities and challenges, maximizing every person's outcomes. How does that sound to you? Does that sound plausible? An AI assistant that can help you with everything, is super compassionate, knows you very well, and you have any questions about anything. What should I do in my job? What should I do with my wife? What should I do with my friends? What should I do with my business? And the AI is going to maximize your outcomes through all of your opportunities and challenges because of its infinite capacities. It's going to be like a little pocket Jesus there with you all the time to help you in everything that you are doing. Every scientist will have an AI assistant, collaborator, partner that will greatly expand their scope of scientific research and achievement. Every artist, every engineer, every business person, every doctor, every caregiver will have the same in their worlds. Every leader of a people. Okay, obviously this is a strong pitch for the fact that everybody on earth can benefit from AI, but let's see, nevertheless, how it spun out. Every leader of people, CEO, government official, non-profit president, athletic coach, teacher will have the same. The magnification effects of better decisions by leaders across the people they lead are enormous, so this intelligence augmentation may be the most important of all. You know, this is, as somebody who studies and teaches the history of political philosophy and political theory, it is the question of the relationship of artificial intelligence systems to governance and to ideas about ruling that interest me and that students of mine bring up to me in discussions, more so than, for example, the significance of AI systems for artists and engineers and so on. So this is a interesting field here, how AI systems would improve or could improve, or whether they would have a detrimental effect on rule. Okay, productivity growth throughout the economy will accelerate dramatically, driving economic growth, creation of new industries, creation of new jobs and wage growth, and resulting in a new era of heightened material prosperity across the planet. Sounds optimistic. Obviously is optimistic. The question is whether it's accurate and plausible. Scientific breakthroughs in new technologies and medicines will dramatically expand as AI helps us further decode the laws of nature and harvest them for our benefit. The creative arts will enter a golden age as AI-augmented artists, musicians, writers, and filmmakers gain the ability to realize their visions far faster and at greater scale than ever before. Again, I'm not sure that speed and scale are the right criterion for the status or the level of development of the creative arts. Do you? Like, I don't know. When you think about the golden age of architecture or something like that, or the golden age of music, the golden age of painting, the golden age of film, is it going to be better just because it's faster and at greater scale? Everybody can just plug in their, I don't know, they had a strange dream at night, they plug it into their AI system, and the next day they have what, a 3D printed, who knows what? So I wonder, okay, but fine, there are smaller scale creative arts that might benefit. Listen, when I was younger, I used to be a big fan of Oasis, the rock and roll band. And recently I've heard AI augmented artists write songs that they have the lead singer of Oasis, Liam Gallagher, his voice on, even though he didn't sing it. So AI augmented music, where you can hear an artist you like singing a song that he didn't write, that you wrote for him or something like that. And frankly, I thought that was pretty good. I enjoyed it. So there is something there that can benefit music, and I assume also these other artistic disciplines too. I even think, he continues, AI is going to improve warfare when it has to happen by reducing wartime death rates dramatically. Every war is characterized by terrible decisions made under intense pressure and with sharply limited information by very limited human leaders. Now military commanders and political leaders will have AI advisors that will help them make much better strategic and tactical decisions, minimizing risk, error, and unnecessary bloodshed. Okay, but what if the AI says you have to be more brutal than you were planning to be? In short, anything that people do with their natural intelligence today can be done much better with AI. And we will be able to take on new... Oh, by the way, the assumption there obviously is that anything, you know, more intelligence means you can do things better. More natural intelligence means you can do things better. And if you augment your natural intelligence, also means you can do things better. We will be able to take on new challenges that have been impossible to tackle without AI, from curing all diseases to achieving interstellar travel. Sounds like promising the moon, in my opinion, but okay. And this isn't just about intelligence. Perhaps the most underestimated quality of AI is how humanizing it can be. AI art gives people who otherwise lack technical skills the freedom to create and share their artistic ideas. Talking to an empathetic AI friend really does improve their ability to handle adversity. You guys probably know, or you may know, the movie Her, speaking of an empathetic AI friend. And AI medical chatbots are already more empathetic than their human counterparts. Rather than making the world harsher and more mechanistic, infinitely patient and sympathetic AI will make the world warmer and nicer. Okay, can you guarantee, I stop here to ask many questions, you may have questions of your own, but can you guarantee that the AI is going to be infinitely patient and sympathetic? Can you ensure at the outset that it's going to want to make the world warmer and nicer, that it won't be unintended consequences and unexpected suggestions and all the other kinds of things that could surprise somebody here if they're dealing with an intelligence system that's more intelligent than any human intelligence? It's kind of like, you know, people in theology and philosophy of religion who say there's a kind of similarity between the intelligence of man and God's intelligence, but it's not a similarity that you can really understand or exploit, and it's almost even blasphemous to think about, because God is so much superior to man. Why should there be any part of us that coincides with or coalesces with something so qualitatively superior? So you can't really even understand. It's only in some strange analogical form that you can say human intelligence and divine intelligence coalesce at any point. Well, okay, fine. If these artificial intelligence systems really reach whatever they're speculating in level of IQ and capacity, why do we assume it will have any similarity to the way that we think? You know, maybe it will recognize, you know what? The world doesn't need to be warmer and nicer. That's a low IQ thought, that the world should be warm and nice. You know what I mean? Like, how do you know when you, by the time you get to whatever, 220 IQ or wherever these things go, if the systems continue to advance? It's like when I create an amazing AI chess player, it's going to play chess exactly the same way as I do, but a little bit better. Or it's going to play Go exactly the same way that I do, but better. No, it might find a completely new way of playing the game, destroy you every time. So a lot of assumptions built in here about the relationship between, like, will intelligence become qualitatively different as it becomes quantitatively superior? The stakes here are high. The opportunities are profound. AI is quite possibly the most important and best thing our civilization has ever created, certainly on par with electricity and microchips, and probably beyond those. The development and proliferation of AI, far from a risk that we should fear, is a moral obligation that we have to ourselves, to our children, and to our future. We should be living in a much better world with AI, and now we can. Okay, so there's the strong first part of the paper. Strong case for the idea that AI will make the world a better place in all respects. In the arts, in the sciences, in medicine, in government. A golden age of humanity, because AI will make everything we care about better. But as I'm sure you know, there are some people who don't think so and who are worried and who are asking to pause the development of AI and so on. So he naturally transitions to the question, why the panic? In contrast to this positive view, the public conversation about AI is presently shot through with hysterical fear and paranoia. We hear claims that AI will variously kill us all, ruin our society, take all our jobs, cause crippling inequality, and enable bad people to do awful things. What explains this divergence in potential outcomes from near utopia to horrifying dystopia? Historically, every new technology that matters, from electric lighting to automobiles to radio to the internet, has sparked a moral panic, a social contagion that convinces people the new technology is going to destroy the world or society or both. The fine folks at Pessimists Archive have documented these technology-driven moral panics over the decades. Their history makes the pattern vividly clear. It turns out this present panic is not even the first for AI. Now, it is certainly the case that many new technologies have led to bad outcomes, often the same technologies that have been otherwise enormously beneficial to our welfare. So it's not that the mere existence of a moral panic means there's nothing to be concerned about, but a moral panic is by its very nature irrational. It takes what may be a legitimate concern and inflates it into a level of hysteria that ironically makes it harder to confront actually serious concerns. I want to say here, not that this is the last word, but you know, a moral panic may be irrational and may take what's legitimate and inflate it. But so too is a kind of zealous over-optimism. An over-optimism that takes what may be a legitimate hope and inflates it into a level of, not hysteria, but, you know, euphoria or mania, that makes it harder to confront actually serious matters. So there's a flip side to this, the irrationality of moral panic, but also the irrationality of over-optimistic, overzealous hopefulness that we shouldn't forget. Okay, and wow, do we have a full-blown moral panic about AI right now? Let's just see, where does this link to? The AI arms race is changing everything. Time Magazine, February 17th, 2023. Okay, maybe we'll look at that later. The moral panic is already being used as a motivating force by a variety of actors to demand policy action, new AI restrictions, regulations, and laws. These actors who are making extremely dramatic public statements about the dangers of AI, feeding on and further inflaming moral panic, all present themselves as selfless champions of the public good. But are they, and are they right or wrong? You see, it always shows you just how important, whatever technological era we are in, so much of politics is a debate over what's good, over the public good, over the common good. Is AI going to contribute to the common good, the public good, or is AI going to be detrimental to the common good? Well, for sure, we have to look into the arguments like he's about to do. And then we also have to have a broad understanding of what is meant by the public good. What is good politically? What is the good society? What's the good human life? And those questions are old questions in the history of political philosophy, from Plato's Republic to Aristotle's Politics, all the way down to Machiavelli and Nietzsche and so on. So if you ever want to, go to millermanschool.com and you'll see I have courses on the history of political philosophy. But right now we continue with this, the Baptists and bootleggers of AI. Economists have observed a long-standing pattern in reform movements of this kind. The actors within movements like these fall into two categories, Baptists and bootleggers, drawing on the historical example of the prohibition of alcohol in the United States in the 1920s. Baptists are the true believer social reformers who legitimately feel deeply and emotionally, if not rationally, that new restrictions, regulations, and laws are required to prevent societal disaster. For alcohol prohibition, these actors were often literally devout Christians who felt that alcohol was destroying the moral fabric of society. For AI risk, these actors are true believers that AI presents one or another existential risks. Strap them to a polygraph, they really mean it. So these are the AI skeptics are the ones who want to deprive you of the pleasures of alcohol. In effect, they're going to be the prohibitionists. Bootleggers are the self-interested opportunists who stand to financially profit by the imposition of new restrictions, regulations, and laws that insulate them from competitors. For alcohol prohibition, these were the literal bootleggers who made a fortune selling illicit alcohol to Americans when legitimate alcohol sales were banned. For AI risk, these are CEOs who stand to make more money if regulatory barriers are erected that form a cartel of government-blessed AI vendors protected from new startup and open source competition, the software version of too big to fail banks. Okay. A cynic would suggest that some of the apparent Baptists are also bootleggers, specifically the ones paid to attack AI by their universities, think tanks, activist groups, and media outlets. If you are paid a salary or receive grants to foster AI panic, you're probably a bootlegger. In other words, you benefit from the restriction of AI. The problem with bootleggers is that they win. The Baptists are naive ideologues. The bootleggers are cynical operators. And so the result of reform movements like these is often that bootleggers get what they want: regulatory capture, insulation from competition, the formation of a cartel. And the Baptists are left wondering where their drive for social improvement went so wrong. We've just lived through a stunning example of this: banking reform after the 2008 global financial crisis. The Baptists told us that we needed new laws and regulations to break up the too-big-to-fail banks to prevent such a crisis from ever happening again. So Congress passed the Dodd-Frank Act of 2010, which was marketed as satisfying the Baptist goal, but in reality was co-opted by the bootleggers, the big banks. The result is that the same banks that were too big to fail in 2008 are much, much larger now. So in practice, even when the Baptists are genuine, and even when the Baptists are right, they are used as cover by manipulative and venal bootleggers that benefit themselves. And this is what is happening in the drive for AI regulation right now. However, it isn't sufficient to simply identify the actors and impugn their motives, like he's just done in this section. We should consider the arguments of both the Baptists and the bootleggers on their merits. So now he's going to turn to AI risk number one: will AI kill us all? Hope not. We're reading this article by Mark and Andreessen called Why AI Will Save the World. This was published not too long ago, I think just earlier this month. And I saw it come up very briefly on my YouTube feed today, a clip of somebody else discussing it. And I thought, you know, I haven't read it. It looks pretty intriguing. Let's go over it. So thanks for being here. Like, share, subscribe, and all the rest of it. Feel free to be active in the chat if you have thoughts on these topics. And we're going to continue on once I find our spot here. Here we go. Will AI kill us all? The first and original AI doomer risk is that AI will decide to literally kill humanity. The fear that technology of our own creation will rise up and destroy us is deeply coded into our culture. The Greeks expressed this fear in the Prometheus myth. Prometheus brought the destructive power of fire, and more generally technology, techne, to man, for which Prometheus was condemned to perpetual torture by the gods. Later, Mary Shelley gave us moderns our own version of this myth in her novel Frankenstein, or The Modern Prometheus, in which we develop the technology for eternal life, which then rises up and seeks to destroy us. And of course, no AI panic newspaper story is complete without a still image of a gleaming red-eyed killer robot from James Cameron's Terminator films. The presumed evolutionary purpose of this mythology is to motivate us to seriously consider potential risks of new technologies. Fire, after all, can indeed be used to burn down entire cities. But just as fire was also the foundation of modern civilization, as used to keep us warm and safe in cold and hostile world, this mythology ignores the far greater upside of most or all new technologies, and in practice inflames destructive emotion rather than reasoned analysis. Just because pre-modern man freaked out like this doesn't mean we have to. We can apply rationality instead. My view, he writes, is that the idea that AI will decide to literally kill humanity is a profound category error. AI is not a living being that has been primed by billions of years of evolution to participate in the battle for the survival of the fittest, as animals are and as we are. It is math, code, computers, built by people, owned by people, used by people, controlled by people. The idea that it will at some point develop a mind of its own and decide that it has motivations that lead it to try to kill us is a superstitious hand wave. Okay, I think largely, from what I've heard anyway, this is somehow the crux of the debate. Will a superintelligence develop some sense of itself and of its own motivations? Will it, you know, become unleashed? Or will it always be a tool in the hands of the people who are using it? And even as a tool, you know, may it become a powerful tool of destruction? But anyway, in short, AI doesn't want, it doesn't have goals, it doesn't want to kill you because it's not alive. And AI is a machine. it's not going to come alive any more than your toaster will. What do you guys think about that? Seems slightly disingenuous because on one hand, he's saying that AI is a technology that's completely unprecedented, that can help improve every aspect of life, that's going to augment human intelligence in every domain. Nobody thinks that a toaster will do those things. Now, obviously, there are true believers in killer AI, Baptists, who are gaining a suddenly stratospheric amount of media coverage for their terrifying warnings, some of whom claim to have been studying the topic for decades and say that they are now scared out of their minds by what they have learned. Some of these true believers are even actual innovators of the technology. These actors are arguing for a variety of bizarre and extreme restrictions on AI, ranging from a ban on AI development all the way up to military airstrikes on data centers and nuclear war. Well, that's kind of crazy. I didn't hear about that. What is this? Pausing AI developments isn't enough. We need to shut it all down. Huh. Yudkowsky is a decision theorist from the US, leads research at the Machine Intelligence Research Institute. Did he call for nuclear, for military strikes on data centers? That's kind of, okay, I'll have to look at that later. Let's go back here. They argue that because people like me cannot rule out future catastrophic consequences of AI, that we must assume a precautionary stance that may require large amounts of physical violence and death in order to prevent potential existential risk. My response, Andreessen writes, is that their position is non-scientific. What is the testable hypothesis? What would falsify the hypothesis? How do we know when we're getting into a danger zone? These questions go mainly unanswered apart from you can't prove it won't happen. In fact, these Baptists' position is so non-scientific and so extreme, a conspiracy theory about math and code, and is already calling for physical violence, that I will do something I would normally not do and question their motives as well. Okay, I'm going to continue in a minute, but this I don't like. You can't, how could you put it? You can't deflate the concerns by presenting AI as merely math and code, which makes it sound kind of banal and therefore makes a conspiracy theory about it seem kind of ridiculous. And at the same time, say that this math and code will improve every aspect of human life in unprecedented ways that are truly infinitely loving and infinitely compassionate. So how can math and code be infinitely patient, infinitely knowledgeable, infinitely helpful, a machine version of infinite love? So when you're talking about the positive side, you can really exploit and anthropologize or anthropomorphize the version of math and code. But when it comes to the concerns, you say, come on, don't be a conspiracy theorist. It's just math. Math can't hurt you. You know what I'm saying? I don't like that. I don't know whether he understands this sort of duplicity here, which should be fine if he does or doesn't. Doesn't matter. Still an interesting article. We're going through it, but you can't have it both ways. If it's just math and it can be infinitely loving, then it's not ridiculous to wonder whether it can also have other less desirable emotional characteristics. Okay, where were we? Sorry about that. One second. I think we were. We're still up here, right? Okay, wait. Yeah, here we go. Okay, so what's going on? He says, "What's going on?" Specifically, I think three things are going on. First, recall that John von Neumann responded to Robert Oppenheimer's famous hand-wringing about his role creating nuclear weapons, which helped end World War II and prevent World War III, with, quote, some people confess guilt to claim credit for the sin, unquote, which is a nice line. What is the most dramatic way one can claim credit for the importance of one's work without sounding overly boastful? This explains the mismatch between the words and actions of the Baptists who are actually building and funding AI. Watch their actions, not their words. Truman was harsher after meeting with Oppenheimer. Don't let that crybaby in here again. Second, some of the Baptists, in other words, some of the people who are warning about the dangers of AI, are actually bootleggers, meaning those who are going to profit from its restriction. There's a whole profession of AI safety expert, AI ethicist, AI risk researcher. They're paid to be doomers, and their statements should be processed appropriately. Third, California is justifiably famous for our many thousands of cults, from Est, incidentally, interestingly influenced by Heidegger, to the People's Temple, from Heaven's Gate to the Manson family. Many, although not all of these cults are harmless and maybe even serve a purpose for alienated people who find homes in them, but some are very dangerous indeed, and cults have a notoriously hard time straddling the line that ultimately leads to violence and death. And the reality, which is obvious to everyone in the Bay Area, but probably not outside of it, is that AI risk has developed into a cult, which has suddenly emerged into the daylight of global press attention and the public conversation. The cult has pulled in not just fringe characters, but also some actual industry experts and not a small number of wealthy donors, including until recently Sam Bankman-Fried. And it's developed a full panoply of cult behaviors and beliefs. This cult is why there are a set of AI risk doomers who sound so extreme. It's not that they actually have secret knowledge that make their extremism logical. It's that they've whipped themselves into a frenzy and really are extremely extreme. It turns out that this type of cult isn't new. There's a long-standing Western tradition of millenarianism, which generates apocalypse cults. The AI risk cult has all the hallmarks of a millenarian apocalypse cult. From Wikipedia, with additions by me, quote, "Millenarianism is the belief by a group or movement, AI risk doomers, in a coming fundamental transformation of society, the arrival of AI, after which all things will be changed, AI utopia, dystopia, or end of the world. Only dramatic events, AI bans, airstrikes on data centers, nuclear strikes on unregulated AI, are seen as able to change the world, prevent AI, and the change is anticipated to be brought about or survived by a group of the devout and dedicated. In most millenarian scenarios, the disaster or battle to come, AI apocalypse or its prevention, will be followed by a new purified world, AI bans, in which the believers will be rewarded or at least acknowledged to have been correct all along." This apocalypse cult pattern is so obvious that I'm surprised more people don't see it. Don't get me wrong, cults are fun to hear about, their written material is often creative and fascinating, and their members are engaging at dinner parties and on TV. But their extreme beliefs should not determine the future of laws in society, obviously not. Okay, so to the first possible criticism of AI, the fear that it's going to kill us all, Mark Andreessen writes that, no, that is not founded in anything other than this fear of new technologies, which may have an evolutionary purpose and which has precedence back in the myth of Prometheus and in the story of Frankenstein. But AI can't want to kill people because AI doesn't want anything, doesn't have goals, isn't alive, and is not much more than a toaster in terms of its intentions. And I already made my comments on that. So let's go to the next one. Will AI ruin our society? Okay, quick pause. This is an article by Mark Andreessen, Why AI Will Save the World, published earlier this month that we're going through. Pretty interesting so far. I hope you like it. You should comment for sure in the chat or comment on the video if you're watching later. Like, share, subscribe. We definitely do live streams on politics and philosophy. And more, I think the arguments over the significance, the political and social significance of these new technologies should be a part of our conversation because it implicates us in questions of sovereignty and the good society, the meaning of a human life, and all the rest of it. So it's a nice topic to include in our conversations. Okay, will AI ruin our society? The second widely mooted AI risk is that AI will ruin our society by generating outputs that will be so harmful, to use the nomenclature of this kind of doomer, as to cause profound damage to humanity, even if we're not literally killed. Short version, if the murder robots don't get us, the hate speech and misinformation will. Okay, so I guess here is like you're going to have all kinds of fake chatbots and all kinds of propaganda farms pushing out by the infinite stream of misinformation technologies. This is a relatively recent doomer concern that branched off from and somewhat took over the AI risk movement that I described above. In fact, the terminology of AI risk recently changed from AI safety, the term used by people who are worried that AI would literally kill us, to AI alignment, the term used by people who are worried about societal harms. The original AI safety people are frustrated by this shift, although they don't know how to put it back in the box. They now advocate that the actual AI risk topic be renamed AI Not Kill Everyone-ism, which has not yet been widely adopted, but is at least clear. The tip-off to the nature of the AI societal risk claim is its own term, AI alignment. Alignment with what? Human values. Whose human values? Ah, that's where things get tricky. Okay, I'm interested to see where he takes this, because remember what he said above. I pointed out he was invoking some human values of his own. Infinite compassion, infinite patience, infinite love. As it happens, I have had a front row seat to an analogous situation, the social media trust and safety wars. As is now obvious, social media services have been under massive pressure from governments and activists to ban, restrict, censor, and otherwise suppress a wide range of content for many years. And the same concerns of quote-unquote hate speech and its mathematical counterpart algorithmic bias and misinformation are being directly transferred from the social media context to the new frontier of AI alignment. My big learnings, he writes, from the social media wars are, on the one hand, there is no absolutist free speech position. First, every country, including the US, makes at least some content illegal. Second, there are certain kinds of content like child pornography and incitements to real-world violence that are nearly universally agreed to be off-limits, legal or not, by virtually every society. So, any technological platform that facilitates or generates content, speech is going to have some restrictions. On the other hand, the slippery slope is not a fallacy, it's an inevitability. Once a framework for restricting even egregiously terrible content is in place, for example, for hate speech, a specific hurtful word, or for misinformation, obviously false claims like the Pope is dead, a shockingly broad range of government agencies and activist pressure groups and non-governmental entities will kick into gear and demand ever greater levels of censorship and suppression of whatever speech they view as threatening to society and their own personal preferences. Just want to remind you on this topic of censorship, we did a stream a couple of weeks ago, Alexander Dugin, on the metaphysics of censorship. Could be interesting to think about in relationship to AI alignment. They will do this up to and including in ways that are nakedly felony crimes. The cycle in practice can run apparently forever with the enthusiastic support of authoritarian hall monitors installed throughout our elite power structures. This has been cascading for a decade in social media, and with only certain exceptions, continues to get more fervent all the time. And so, this is the dynamic that has formed around AI alignment now. Its proponents claim the wisdom to engineer AI-generated speech and thought that are good for society, and to ban AI-generated speech and thoughts, that are bad for society. And to ban AI-generated, so basically, you permit the good stuff, you ban the bad stuff. Its opponents claim that the thought police are breathtakingly arrogant and presumptuous, and often outright criminal, at least in the US, and in fact are seeking to become a new kind of fused government, corporate, academic, authoritarian speech dictatorship ripped straight from the pages of Orwell's 1984. Guys, I'm sure you have heard about this concern. In fact, Jordan Peterson, maybe a couple of days ago or sometime last week, posted on his Twitter, I think it was the UN, maybe, or some institution like that, that said they were now going to be having, you know, AI automated misinformation, censorship, something like that. So that's the concern, okay? Suddenly you're going to have ideologically supercharged AI systems that are designed to police speech and label everything they don't like hate speech. So like exactly what happens now, but augmented by, so AI augmented ideological censorship. As the proponents of both trust and safety and AI alignment are clustered into the very narrow slice of the global population that characterizes the American coastal elites, which includes many of the people who work in and write about the tech industry, many of my readers will find yourselves primed to argue that dramatic restrictions on AI output are required to avoid destroying society. I will not attempt to talk you out of this now, he writes. I will simply state that this is the nature of the demand and that most people in the world neither agree with your ideology nor want to see you win. What do we have here? America has a free... What's he referring to? Well, it's behind the paywall. We'll look at it another day. Okay, so most people in the world do not agree with the ideology of the American coastal elites and don't want to see them win, and therefore don't want to see an AI aligned with their ideology, especially with their censorious limitations on free speech. If you don't agree with the prevailing niche morality that is being imposed on both social media and AI via ever-intensifying speech codes, You should also realize that the fight over what AI is allowed to say or generate will be even more important, by a lot, than the fight over social media censorship. AI is highly likely to be the control layer for everything in the world. How it is allowed to operate is going to matter perhaps more than anything else has ever mattered. I don't know how you feel about it when you see statements like that. It seems a little bit on the exaggerated side, but okay, I guess you have to consider it. You should be aware of how a small and isolated coterie of partisan social engineers are trying to determine that right now, under cover of the age-old claim that they're protecting you. In short, don't let the thought police suppress AI. Okay, so you had another argument here. AI is going to ruin our society because it's going to be allowed to be a racist, homophobic, and fascist. You know what I mean, right? It's going to be allowed to say things that don't pass the test of political correctness or whatever, and that it should be made to answer to the dogmas of the day in order to be safe. And he says, no, don't let the thought police suppress AI. Okay, AI risk number 3. Will AI take all our jobs? Well, if you don't have a job, you're safe. The fear of job loss due variously to mechanization, automation, and computerization, or AI, has been a recurring panic for hundreds of years since the original onset of machinery, such as the mechanical loom. Even though every new major technology has led to more jobs at higher wages throughout history, each wave of this panic is accompanied by claims that this time it is different. This is the time it will finally happen. This is the technology that will finally deliver the hammer blow to human labor. And yet it never happens. I hear, too, I'm going to interrupt the article just to point out that there's a flip side to this argument, right? So he says every time there's a panic, the panic says this time it's different, but it's always the same. But we should point out that the flip side is he's also saying this time it's different on the optimistic side of things. Remember what he put here, right? He said, how you're going to operate AI may matter more than anything else has ever mattered. Okay, same sort of idea. This is the technology that's really going to be so different from all the technologies that have come before, none of which could be infinitely loving, infinitely compassionate, infinitely patient, and so on. Okay, so just keep in mind, you want to make sure you don't lose sight of that. He's not allowed to overstate the benefits and understate the harms. So you just got to keep an eye on it. Okay, so we've been through two such technology-driven unemployment panic cycles in our recent past, the outsourcing panic of the 2000s and the automation panic of the 2010s. Notwithstanding many talking heads, pundits, and even tech industry executives pounding the table throughout both decades that mass unemployment was near, by late 2019, right before the onset of COVID, the world had more jobs at higher wages than ever in history. Nevertheless, this mistaken idea will not die. And sure enough, it's back. This time, we finally have the technology that's going to take all the jobs and render human workers superfluous, real AI. Surely this time history won't repeat, and AI will cause mass unemployment and not rapid economic job and wage growth, right? No. That's not going to happen. And in fact, AI, if allowed to develop and proliferate throughout the economy, may cause the most dramatic and sustained economic boom of all time, with correspondingly record job and wage growth, the exact opposite of the fear. And here's why. Okay, so good. We have the claim it's going to destroy job growth, and we have the counterclaim. No, it's not. It's going to lead to a boom. Well, that's the claim. What's the argument? The core mistake the automation kills jobs doomers keep making is called the lump of labor fallacy. This fallacy is the incorrect notion that there is a fixed amount of labor to be done in the economy at any given time, and either machines do it or people do it. And if machines do it, there will be no work for people to do. The lump of labor fallacy flows naturally from naive intuition, but naive intuition here is wrong. When technology is applied to production, we get productivity growth, an increase in output generated by a reduction in inputs. The result is lower prices for goods and services. As prices for goods and services fall, we pay less for them, meaning that we now have extra spending power with which to buy other things. This increases demand in the economy, which drives the creation of new production, including new products and new industries, which then creates new jobs for the people who were replaced by machines in prior jobs. The result is a larger economy with higher material prosperity, more industries, more products, and more jobs. But the good news doesn't stop there. We also get higher wages. This is because at the level of the individual worker, The marketplace sets compensation as a function of the marginal productivity of the worker. A worker in a technology-infused business will be more productive than a worker in a traditional business. The employer will either pay that worker more money, as he is now more productive, or another employer will, purely out of self-interest. The result is that technology introduced into an industry generally not only increases the number of jobs in the industry, but also increases wages. Okay, you guys see that the technology is going to make you marginally more productive and therefore is going to increase your wages if wages are related to marginal productivity. To summarize, technology empowers people to be more productive. This causes the prices for existing goods and services to fall and for wages to rise. This in turn causes economic growth and job growth while motivating the creation of new jobs and new industries. If a market economy is allowed to function normally, and if technology is allowed to be introduced freely, this is a perpetual upward cycle that never ends. For, as Milton Friedman observed, human wants and needs are endless. Incidentally, also something that Aristotle observed in the Politics. We always want more than we have. And Plato in the Republic. A technology-infused market economy is the way we get closer to delivering everything everyone could conceivably want, but never all the way there. And that is why technology doesn't destroy jobs and never will. Okay, continuing. These are such mind-blowing ideas for people who have not been exposed to them that it may take you some time to wrap your head around them, but I swear I'm not making them up. In fact, you can read about them in standard economic textbooks. I recommend the chapter The Curse of Machinery in Henry Hazlitt's Economics in One Lesson and Frederick Bastiat's satirical Candlemaker's Petition to blot out the sun due to its unfair competition with the lighting industry, here modernized for our times. But this time is different, you're thinking. This time with AI, we have the technology that can replace all human labor. But using the principles I described above, he writes, think of what it would mean for literally all existing human labor to be replaced by machines. It would mean a takeoff rate of economic productivity growth that would be absolutely stratospheric, far beyond any historical precedent. Prices of existing goods and services would drop across the board to virtually zero. Consumer welfare would skyrocket. Consumer spending power would skyrocket. New demand in the economy would explode. Entrepreneurs would create dizzying arrays of new industries, products, and services, and employ as many people and AI as they could as fast as possible to meet all the new demand. Suppose AI once again replaces that labor, the cycle would repeat, etc. It would be a straight spiral up to material utopia that neither Adam Smith nor Karl Marx ever dreamed of. We should be so lucky. Okay, so let's just review where we are at in this article. Whoops, sorry. So, first we had the claim that AI is going to make everything we care about better. Everything. Because you're going to have augmented intelligence, and intelligence is such a lead indicator of where you're going to be successful. That augmented intelligence is going to make everything better. Children, parents, leaders, scientists, artists, you name it. But most people are arguing that AI is going to kill us all, take our jobs, and do all kinds of other crazy things. And he had some analysis of why that is, in part because when you ask for the regulation of AI, you may also benefit from that regulation, like the bootleggers who made a fortune selling illicit alcohol to Americans when legitimate alcohol sales were banned. But besides the economic possible upside of arguing for a regulation of AI, he also wanted to examine their arguments on their merits. Will AI kill us all? We just discussed a moment ago, it won't. Because it doesn't want to kill anybody, doesn't want to do anything. It's just a tool in the hands of people. It has no personality, no intention, no agency, and no malice, as it were. Then we have the idea that AI will ruin our society because it's going to be freely allowed to say all kinds of things that mess up our social conversation. Therefore, it should be made to be politically correct, in effect. And he said, no, do not let the thought police suppress AI. The third risk, it's going to take all our jobs. He said, far from it. It's going to lead to a boom. More jobs, more higher paying jobs, a golden age of economic prosperity. So we're at AI risk number four now. Will AI lead to crippling inequality? Speaking of Karl Marx, the concern about AI taking jobs, segues? How do you say that word? I think I always said segues. Okay, the concern about AI taking jobs segues directly into the next claim, AI risk, the next claimed AI risk, which is, okay, Mark, suppose AI does take all the jobs, either for bad or for good, won't that result in massive and crippling wealth inequality as the owners of AI reap all the economic rewards and regular people get nothing. By the way, once upon a time, I can't vouch for it because I don't remember it well enough, but I read a book called, oh, what's that guy's name? Giorgiani, right? Giorgiani. The book was called Prometheism, I think. Prometheism, something like that. And it argues sort of like this, that as technology develops, as it gets through the, and it should develop, as the Promethean spirit develops and it should develop, it's going to produce massive social inequality between the basically subhuman, like humanity will branch into a technologically superhuman overlords and subhuman slaves. But okay, speaking of Karl Marx, the wealth inequality. As it happens, this was a central claim of Marxism that the owners of the means of production, the bourgeoisie, would inevitably steal all societal wealth from the people who do the actual work, the proletariat. This is another fallacy that simply will not die, no matter how often it's disproved by reality, but let's drive a stake through its heart anyway. The flaw in this theory is that as the owner of a piece of technology, it's not in your interest to keep it to yourself. In fact, the opposite. It's in your own interest to sell it to as many customers as possible. The largest market in the world for any product is the entire world, all 8 billion of us. And so in reality, every new technology, even ones that start by selling to the rarefied air of high-paying big companies or wealthy customers, rapidly proliferates until it's in the hands of the largest possible mass market, ultimately everyone on the planet. The classic example of this was Elon Musk's so-called secret plan, which he naturally published openly for Tesla in 2006. Step one, build expensive sports car. Step two, use that money to build an affordable car. Step three, use that money to build an even more affordable car, which is exactly what he's done, becoming the richest man in the world as a result. The last point is key. Would Elon be even richer if he only sold cars to rich people today? No. Would he be even richer than that if he only made cars for himself? Of course not. No, he maximizes his own profit by selling to the largest possible market, the world. In short, everyone gets the thing, as we saw in the past with not just cars, but also electricity, radio, computers, the internet, mobile phones, and search engines. The makers of such technologies are highly motivated to drive down their prices until everyone on the planet can afford them. This is precisely what is already happening in AI. It's why you can use state-of-the-art generative AI, not just at low cost, but even for free today, in the form of Microsoft Bing and Google Bard. And it is what will continue to happen. Not because such vendors are foolish or generous, but precisely because they are greedy. They want to maximize the size of their market, which maximizes their profits. I'm not going to lie. I can relate to that. Millermanschool.com. If the whole world was my customer, you know, if everybody in the world was taking the Plato course or the Heidegger course or the Dugin course, wouldn't necessarily be so bad. What happens is the opposite of technology driving centralization of wealth. Individual customers of the technology, ultimately including everyone on the planet, are empowered instead and capture most of the generated value. As with prior technologies, the companies that build AI, assuming they have to function in a free market, will compete furiously to make this happen. Marx was wrong then, and he's wrong now. This is not to say that inequality is not an issue in our society. It is. It's just not being driven by technology. It's being driven by the reverse, by the sectors of the economy that are the most resistant to new technology, that have the most government intervention to prevent the adoption of new technology like AI, specifically housing, education, and healthcare. The actual risk of AI and inequality is not that AI will cause more inequality, but rather that we will not allow AI to be used to reduce inequality. Okay, so not only will it not lead to crippling inequality, it's somehow our best hope for producing more genuine equality. Okay, or for reducing inequality. AI risk number 5. Let me just see how many more do we have to go through. So one more on the numbered list. Let's have a look. Will AI lead to bad people doing bad things? So far, I've explained why 4 of the 5 most often proposed risks of AI are not actually real. AI will not come to life and kill us. AI will not ruin our society. AI will not cause mass unemployment. And AI will not cause a ruinous increase in inequality. But now, let's address the 5th, the one I actually agree with. AI will make it easier for bad people to do bad things. In some sense, this is a tautology. Technology is a tool. Tools starting with fire and rocks can be used to do good things, cook food and build houses, and bad things, burn people and bludgeon people. Any technology can be used for good or bad, fair enough, and AI will make it easier for criminals, terrorists, and hostile governments to do bad things, no question. This causes some people to propose, well, in that case, let's not take the risk. Let's ban AI now before this can happen. Unfortunately, AI is not some esoteric physical matter that is hard to come by like plutonium. It's the opposite. It's the easiest material in the world to come by, math and code. The AI cat is obviously already out of the bag. You can learn how to build AI from thousands of free online courses, books, papers, and videos, and there are outstanding open source implementations proliferating by the day. AI is like air, it will be everywhere. The level of totalitarian oppression that would be required to arrest that would be so draconian. A world government monitoring and controlling all computers, jackbooted thugs in black helicopters seizing rogue GPUs, that we would not have a society left to protect. So instead, there are two very straightforward ways to address the risk of bad people doing bad things with AI, and these are precisely what we should focus on. First, we have the laws on the books to criminalize most of the bad things that anyone is going to do with AI. Hack into the Pentagon, that's a crime. Steal money from a bank, that's a crime. Create a bioweapon, that's a crime. Commit a terrorist act, that's a crime. We can simply focus on preventing those crimes when we can, and prosecuting them when we cannot. We don't even need new laws. I'm not aware of a single actual bad use for AI that's been proposed that's not already illegal. And if a new bad use is identified, we ban that use. But you'll notice what I slipped in there. I said we should focus first on preventing AI-assisted crimes before they happen. Wouldn't such prevention mean banning AI? Well, there's another way to prevent such actions, and that's by using AI as a defensive tool. The same capabilities that make AI dangerous in the hands of bad guys with bad goals make it powerful in the hands of good guys with good goals, specifically the good guys whose job it is to prevent bad things from happening. For example, if you're worried about AI generating fake people and fake videos, the answer is to build new systems where people can verify themselves and real content via cryptographic signatures. Digital creation and alteration of both real and fake content was already here before AI. The answer is not to ban word processors and Photoshop or AI, but to use technology to build a system that actually solves the problem. And so second, let's mount major efforts to use AI for good, legitimate defensive purposes. Let's put AI to work in cyber defense and biological defense, in hunting terrorists, and in everything else that we want to do to keep ourselves, our communities, and our nation safe. There are already many smart people in and out of government doing exactly this, of course, but if we apply all of the effort and brain power that's currently fixated on the futile prospect of banning AI to using AI to protect against bad people doing bad things, I think there's no question a world infused with AI will be much safer than the world we live in today. Okay, and we're getting close to the end here. Let's see what we have next. The actual risk of not pursuing AI with maximum force and speed. There is one final and real AI risk that's probably the scariest of all. AI isn't just being developed in the relatively free societies of the West, it's also being developed by the Communist Party of the People's Republic of China. China has a vastly different vision for AI than we do. They view it as a mechanism for authoritarian population control, full stop. They're not even being secretive about this, they're very clear about it, and they are already pursuing their agenda. And they do not intend to limit their AI strategy to China. They intend to proliferate it across the world. Everywhere they are powering 5G networks. Everywhere they are loaning Belt and Road money. Everywhere they are providing friendly consumer apps like TikTok that serve as front ends to their centralized command and control AI. The single greatest risk of AI is that China wins global AI dominance and we, the United States and the West, do not. I, he writes, propose a simple strategy for what to do about this. In fact, the same strategy President Ronald Reagan used to win the first Cold War with the Soviet Union. We win, they lose. Rather than allowing ungrounded panics around killer AI, harmful AI, job-destroying AI, and inequality-generating AI to put us on our back feet, we in the United States and the West should lean into AI as hard as we possibly can. We should seek to win the race to global AI technological superiority and ensure that China does not. In the process, we should drive AI into our economy and society as fast and hard as we possibly can in order to maximize its gains for economic productivity and human potential. This is the best way both to offset the real AI risks and to ensure that our way of life is not displaced by the much darker Chinese version. What is to be done? He asks, I propose a simple plan. Big AI companies should be allowed to build AI as fast and aggressively as they can, but not allowed to achieve regulatory capture, not allowed to establish a government-protected cartel that is insulated from market competition due to incorrect claims of AI risk. This will maximize the technological and societal payoff from the amazing capabilities of these companies, which are jewels of modern capitalism. Startup AI companies should be allowed to build AI as fast and aggressively as they can. They should neither confront government-granted protection of big companies, nor should they receive government assistance. They should simply be allowed to compete. If and as startups don't succeed, their presence in the market will also continuously motivate big companies to be their best. Our economies and societies win either way. Open source AI should be allowed to freely proliferate, and compete with both big AI companies and startups. There should be no regulatory barriers to open source whatsoever. Even when open source does not beat companies, its widespread availability is a boon to students all over the world who want to learn how to build and use AI to become part of the technological future, and will ensure that AI is available to everyone who can benefit from it, no matter who they are or how much money they have. To offset the risk of bad people doing bad things with AI, governments working in partnership with the private sector should vigorously engage in each area of potential risk to use AI to maximize society's defensive capabilities. This shouldn't be limited to AI-enabled risks, but also more general problems such as malnutrition, disease, and climate. AI can be an incredibly powerful tool for solving problems, and we should embrace it as such. To prevent the risk of China achieving global AI dominance, we should use the full power of our private sector, our scientific establishment, and our governments in concert to drive American and Western AI to absolute global dominance, including ultimately inside China itself. We win, they lose, and that is how we use AI to save the world. It's time to build. And then what do we have here? Just two paragraphs to go. Legends and heroes. I close, Mark Andreessen writes, with two simple statements. The development of AI started in the 1940s, simultaneous with the invention of the computer. The first scientific paper on neural networks, the architecture of the AI we have today, was published in 1943. Entire generations of AI scientists over the last 80 years were born, went to school, worked, and in many cases passed away without seeing the payoff that we are receiving now. They are legends, everyone. Today, growing legions of engineers, many of whom are young and may have had grandparents or even great-grandparents involved in the creation of the ideas behind AI, are working to make AI a reality against a wall of fear-mongering and doomerism that is attempting to paint them as reckless villains. I do not believe they are reckless or villains. They are heroes, everyone. My firm and I are thrilled to back as many of them as we can, and we will stand alongside them in their work 100%. Okay, so there you go. That was an interesting article. I hope that you learned something from it, and maybe you would not have read it otherwise, so I'm glad we had a chance to go over it. Why AI will save the world, a strong argument here in favor of AI maximalism, going all in on AI fast and hard, and specifically overcoming some of the more common or responding to some of the more common objections to AI, that it will kill us all, that it's going to have detrimental effects on our society, that it's going to take all our jobs, that it's going to lead to crippling inequality, and that people will do bad things with it, which is the risk that he said actually is the most likely. But you can use AI to stop the bad people who want to do bad things with it. If you just use AI for detection purposes and you enforce the laws that are already in place. So there you go. I hope that you enjoyed that. As I said, we should find more occasion to discuss the significance of new AI technologies and all the rest of it for the question of the good society, of political sovereignty, of progressivism, and the relationship with technology, freedom, tyranny, all of these kinds of things. I've been discussing those topics more and more with my students in private tutoring who ask me to walk them through what the tradition of political philosophy has had to say, so that they, who are working in fields of technological entrepreneurship and development, can think more clearly about the underlying political theory dimension of the new technologies. And it's great. I'm glad that that's happening. I encourage you to check out millermanschool.com, like, share, subscribe to this channel, comment, and all the rest of it, so these videos can be picked up by the algorithm, shared, and the channel can grow. Okay, thanks, everybody. Great being with you. Have a nice day. Until the next video, take care. Goodbye.